Eyes to the Visionary Activist Show, and I'm your weaver of context, Caroline Casey. So the moon is exalted in Taurus next to Jupiter. Do watch it tonight. It's a glorious thing. Remember, as our ally, the late Kenneth Baker, said, beauty is always available to the reflective mind. We go, oh. So the moon exalted in Taurus next to Jupiter and Uranus, can't see that, but it's there, on their rendezvous course, proffering the possibility of necessary miracles, calling and dedicating to daily acts of kindness and beauty. So, perfectly, we welcome longtime ally Vicki Robin. In addition to co-authoring the international bestseller Your Money or Your Life, has been a serial social innovator, co-creating the Conversation Cafes, organizing her community for resilience in this time of unraveling, hosting the podcast What Could Possibly Go Right, and now writing poetry and essays about coming of aging, the possibility for liberation as we lose who we thought we were. Find her at VickiRobin.com and her new Substack, VickiRobin.substack.com. Welcome, Vicki.
Hey, hi. How are you?
Well, all the better for reading your poem and re-cahooting with yourself. So it was reading your poem that I go, ooh, I should get back in touch. The confluence of allies. Yeah, there's so much, you know, we've been delineating the themes that we spoke about also backstage, which is community, and the toxic mimic of community, which is a cult. So community meant to be liberating, and a cult is always imprisoning. But, and always the micro, macro, everything going on in the world is in us in some form. But do you want to, again, anywhere you want to go, but do you want to start off by reading that splendid poem, How Then Shall We Live?
Sure, yeah. I do ecstatic dance on Sunday mornings with about 40 sweaty people half my age, and so the poem came in the middle of dancing. The world is in flames. I am not burning. Systems are collapsing. I have never been more whole. Our people are polarized. There has never been so much room in my heart. We are shaking in our boots. I root deeper. We don't resist collapse out there. We let it transform us. Even in grief, rage, and the next good idea.
Yes, I think we
can all unpack that some.
I'm sorry, say
yeah,
what?
Yeah, go ahead.
No, I was just sighing. I was just taking it in and sighing,
okay.
Going, ah, yes.
Yeah.
Wonderful, good. There we go. Yeah, there's so much, you know, horror and carnage, you know, Rafa, anything anywhere is everywhere, but most powerfully there, and what shall we do? And, you know, humbled by the horror, we then turn to our deeper selves, you know, to call in, you know, to call in whatever we need, whatever is wiser and better than us, having our rogue species, having outsourced leadership to incompetent or sociopaths, and so we want to in-source that back. But I did excavate your birthday. I couldn't help myself. But it's so beautiful just to, you know, the image for your Neptune is pilgrims gather around a campfire, shared pursuits that draw people together, journeying towards a common goal, seeing that each person is a piece of the whole, as in the Canterbury Tales. Isn't that so you?
Yeah, it's like so me. Who came up with that? That was just my birth chart, huh?
That's there's something called Sabian symbols. It's an old tradition, really going back to Egypt and then being reworked. But that each degree of the zodiac has a metaphor, and so that is the metaphor for your Neptune. And just to share a few more, because I can't help myself, the image for your Uranus, your trickster genius, is woman gives rousing speech on behalf of the earth. We go, thank you. Thank you very much. From a place of great wisdom, the image for your Chiron, the mentor, having mentors, being a mentor, is one of my favorites. It's in a cave overhung with twisted roots. A seeker pours over the glowing pages of an illuminated alchemical manuscript. We go, that's kind of you too, right?
It's totally way better picture than any of my professional pictures.
No, you can use these. You can use these.
Totally. Right,
and more. And you share a birthday with George W. Bush and the Dalai Lama. There, that proves astrology.
Exactly.
So.
And Frida Kahlo. Yeah, I once wrote an essay about freedom, and that we're four different versions of freedom, and that, you know, Bush is freedom through domination, Frida Kahlo is freedom through liberation, the Dalai Lama is freedom through transcendence, and I think my freedom is just learning to move in and among community and other people without, you know, being able to fully contribute and not feeling dominated. My freedom is the freedom with, you know, the freedom to move with people. So I think I thought it was interesting, you know, whether it was just me sense making. But there's all sorts of versions of freedom. I wrote a whole book about that one time. I called it The Freedoms That Separate, which is the classic American ideas of freedom. Freedom from, you know, getting away from it, to it, with it, and the freedom to, you know, have whatever you want, whenever you want, and you can't stop me. But I said there's the freedoms that connect, you know, there's the freedom for, it's like I'm a being in time and in place, and my purpose, my freedom for, I am replete with freedom. Freedom is coursing through me. It is like actually a crisis that I have so much freedom. And so it's my job to direct it towards whatever I say is worth it. And so usually we think about freedom as something being denied to us, you know, something that somebody else can take away. But the fact, as far as I'm concerned, is that the universe is full of freedom, but it's also full of things, of constraints. And so the other freedom is what I call freedom with, is that learning that as you are enacting your freedom, every other part and parcel and piece of life is enacting their freedom as well. So learning to move in and amongst all of life as a free and responsible being. I mean, I think that's the highest order, you know, of freedom. And that's freedom in community. And, you know, you talked about cults before, you know, a cult very often, I mean, the United States is a cult, by the way, you know, and it was like, it seemed kind of pretty groovy in the beginning, but, you know, what happens in a cult is that the circle that has created a sense of meaning and purpose, you know, whether it's the Declaration of Independence, whatever that is, you know, people circle up and they say, okay, now this is who we're going to be. And like all the signers of the Declaration of Independence, I wasn't there, I don't know them, but you could imagine that they all in that signing considered themselves equal in history, but then the power, you know, the inability to own your own power, the freedom with, you know, somebody will learn how to exercise that. And so over time, it becomes a hierarchy, which is what we've got. I mean, now it's like, how did we end up with two old white dudes? You know, we just are horrified, but it's in the sort of in the nature of the of like a system becoming a cult. Anyway, I went off on something. I don't remember where I was.
No, that's good. That's you're completely welcome to meander, and it's perfect because we don't need astrology, you know. But it's a remedial skill, you know. But people are speaking it all the time, and so you were just speaking to Mars, where it is now for all of us, right next to Pluto. Its image is a deserter from the Navy. We could fill in anything, a deserter from Orthodoxy. A deserter from the Navy following their own wilderness path, right? We go, right. And that idea of autonomy, Aquarius is the realm of Saturn, discipline, and Uranus, wildness. And, you know, I continue to quip that, you know, I can be lonely on my own, but it takes a group in which to be alienated. But it's so there's that. We want community that encourages the uniqueness, right, of everyone. You know, And so yeah, it's
yeah, my quip is everybody wants community. Unfortunately, it involves other people, and that's the rub, you know, because
yeah.
it's like an idealized sense of belonging and purpose and, you know, being part. And that's part of what gets us into cults, whatever kind of cult, whether it's a marriage or, you know, what's considered a cult. It gets us in. The idealism gets you in the door.
Yes.
But then once you're in there, you're dealing with everyday human beings, you know, imperfect, you know, largely unconscious. And the conflicts come, and then you think, I want to escape back into idealism, you know, either divorce or deprogram yourself. It's just so interesting. I mean, this whole thing about freedom, it's a skill, Caroline. It's a it takes real skill to be a free being. And I'm sure there's a translation of that in astrology. And in a way, you know, what I have said for a long time is like, you sort of think that there's adults someplace who are going to like fix this thing. Like, where are the adults? Where are the people who are grown up, you know, who are watching out for the whole system? You know, where are those people? And we don't have them. We're a very immature culture. We cut ourselves off from our ancestors, our history. You know, imagine the melting pot. We're so unanchored in any values. And so our shared values become materialism and consumerism. So I'm sure that that has a correlate in astrology as well.
Yes. Well, so many things. I like to invoke, you know, because I lived with actual coyote, Stella Coyote, for 19 years. So we did create our own creation myth, Stella Coyote and I. Long before there were humans, there was Coyote, nature's genius trickster, who sets the whole shebang going with a sizzle of liberating lightning. And this liberating lightning, nature's trickster genius, moves through everything, everything. Everything is part of something, and everything is unique, and everything is precious, through all the flora, fauna, fungi, and every now and then it gets orthodoxed or constrained or imprisoned. So this part of nature that is in us becomes a great escape artist and a great escapade artist, and then it sizzles all the way into all of us right now. Again, you know, our uniqueness. It's like some, you know, what do we most want to cultivate now? And it's like, well, our cooperation with nature's genius. And what you say about, you know, it's about sovereignty and freedom with and for the earth, you know, to resolve that. I do love, you know, Steve Behrman quipping. He says, the answer to the drug problem, easily resolved. The answer to the drug problem, improve reality. Right, and we go, that's the solution to everything. the answer to the immigration problem, improve reality. So thank you, Steve. Really a genius quip. So let us be the improve reality party, right? And even if we don't know how, right, we invite it in, you know, more beauty, more love, more kinship, more dedicated acts of beauty, you know, all of that as such a at this time. We had Valentine's Day yesterday, you know, on Facebook. It says, this Valentine's Day, every single heart's desire should be a ceasefire, or better than a ceasefire. I read a wonderful piece from an ally on Twitter who said, ceasefire is a military term. You know, it implies equals at war. This is not that. You know, we want a permanent peace, and we want to see things. You know, our seeing and our inviting in. And, you know, what is the desirable story that we want to invite in? We go, right. And yeah. Sovereignty. Yes.
Yeah, I'm just, you know, I'm listening to you. I'm sort of, and we're back. We're now on Israel and Gaza and what's happening there. And, you know, I have no capacity to know what's right. I mean, I can stand here, you know, in my little corner, you know, my little, you know, village, and I can say what I think and what should happen. But I think one of the things is that part of the Western mind is is rupture with the wisdom of the past, or, you know, the fiery flame that, you know, that, that formed the universe, that's, you know, charged with freedom and also charged with connection. We don't think much about the antecedents. I guess I'm going back to the maturation thing. Where is the maturity? I mean, it's like the World Court tried to operate in a more mature way of saying, you know, this is affecting not just the two players, but this is affecting the whole world. And this is affecting what the whole world has said is right and wrong. I think that's what we're trying for, is like some capacity to not, like, you know, religious dogma, but just some capacity to say, wait a second, this is wrong. You know, not have to run around and say, you know, like the details of what's wrong, but this is really wrong. This is, you don't hit the other kids. You know, you resolve conflict. So it's part of the horrifying things is that we don't have, where is, you know, the United Nations has been defanged, you know, and Israel says, oh, if you're going against me, I'm going to leave. Yeah, well, that's not very strong. Where's the container where we can actually have this conversation? You know, that's the sort of thing I think about, is I'm very practical. You know, when I come up to a problem, not exactly this problem because it's huge, but I think, okay, what can, you know, ethical, moral, you know, awake human beings in groups, not just individuals, you know, like flapping in the wind, but what can we do? What new forms, what sort of like sweetness can we, you know, move into the collective consciousness? You know, it's like when I was doing Your Money, Your Life, I had like a notebook full of sound bites, and I just considered it like part of the medicine. I was just floating those in through every interview. You know, how much is enough? You know, I can't even narrate them, but it's like memes are not like just yelling at somebody who's doing it wrong in our opinion, but it's like floating in. It's like adding in, like creating a language amongst us, in the language of war, creating a language where people can start saying the phrases. Like I back in the day, you know, Your Money, Your Life was incredibly popular. It was a New York Times bestseller. And I would sit on the phone, yes, and had a cord and everything, and being interviewed. And I just knew that reporter was taking down verbatim what I was saying. And I was just feeding it in. They were all agents of that, whatever wisdom, you know, bit of wisdom we were sitting on. Anyway, I'm just riffing on, like, what is it that we down here, you know, down here, the peons, what can we do? It's a tough question. Go.
And we excavate, we proclaim our availability to be danced into place, you know, where we can do the most good, have the most fun, contribute our gifts, you know, at this time. excavate everything. Like, what did everything want to be before it got constrained or kerfuffled? And that even Valentine's Day, and I owe this to Pat Ewing with her biblical scholarship. So what is Valentine's Day? What was it meant to be? It was named after almost Pope Valentinius. Right, it's a fork in the road that we didn't take that we might want to revisit. Almost Pope Valentinius was a true heretic in the best sense of the word. He said, equal men and women, equal priest and laity, rotate.
Wow.
One week you're a priest, the next you're laity. And what is this ridiculous superstition of original sin? This is nothing. Right, and so he was almost the Pope, right? But the fathers, the MAGA, the religious MAGA of the day, were like, no, we will do everything to stop this. And they just went crazy afterwards, even after they prevented him from becoming pope. The next, 100 years were all kind of shouting refutation of his terrible ideas. And they overcorrected, right? And they were like, oh, and we all know that, women have no souls anyway. But just to go back, it's like it was meant to be the celebration of almost equality. And this is before us now, too, which is like, woo, everywhere. And it's humans with the earth, right? And let those who love the earth steward the earth. And that's really the calling now, and the whole realm of biomimicry. And it's as though all of flora, fauna, fungi is, backstage going, what should we do about the humans? We got to either kill them or heal them. Let's do both. But let's make everything that has ever moved humans to participatory goodness available again, and our inner dedication strengthens our outer signal. And it's I do find the astromytho story so heartening, going, oh, there's more. Even as we gaze at the moon and Jupiter tonight, going, oh, that's very beautiful. But it also has a signature, Jupiter, the power of curiosity, stories, and blessing. And it's right next to the moon, Big Mama, exalted, and right next to Uranus, nature's evolutionary genius, right, tonight, now, through us all. And we go, right. And I'm very fond of Sim Curran, on Instagram, who says, everybody gets a place to live and everybody has equal rights because that's just how it's got to be. And the necessary miracles going, we don't know how. And that's where the astro story kind of chimes in with support going, how is the last question? The first one is what? What? Right. And what's the desirable vision? And then Jupiter and Uranus, nature's evolutionary trickster genius, say, we can do what you humans can't. You tell us what, we'll do how. And that's the blessing of this year. So it's like inner dedication, the what. And we don't burden the what with how because it downloads, generations of ancestral futility. Like, oh, we can't do it. It's like, no. The Saturn within us all's job is what? That's it. And then Jupiter-Uranus waiting in the wings as a part of nature's evolutionary intelligence goes, do common sense things. That's magic too. But not to let the compelling illusion of realism be an imaginative impediment. It's like, okay, all right, we're going to do that. It's good.
Exactly.
And it's like Rumi, a great astrologer as well as known for his poetry. But he said, when strife and tension are in the sky, you cannot escape it. Your only hope is to dance towards it in full embrace, going, oh, okay. I like that. So, and it's part of, these intense forces that we're all navigating through, are all deconditioning. And I want to come to your work on age and everything. Deconditioning. Whew. What is a bold, how do we decolonize our imaginations to not be timid about expressing the desirable, impossible thing? There we go. So, so that's bubbling away, and we call on almost Pope Valentinius and the dream of true equality and, humans and St. Francis, and Pope Francis is doing pretty good. And then, the conundrum, as you brought up, the elderly candidates for leadership, right? And I've been, I've been pretty, pro-Biden, working with Biden. He's workable. Climate legislation, as Kim Stanley Robinson said, in April, isn't it wonderful that Biden has put so many smart young women in charge of climate change? And it's like, yes. But this moral failure on Gaza, this exclusion of his talent for grief, which has opened doors for him in Israel and everywhere. He's been good at grieving rituals, except this huge, crucial thing. And it's like,
right.
Ooh. But again, I think it comes back to all of us going, then let us define what we're hiring. Let us define the qualities of leadership. And again, it's Saturn in all of us says, define it. And Jupiter Uranus says, all right, We'll you know, craft our vessel of dedication, and Jupiter says, we'll fill it. And we go, okay, so what, you know, from all the horror as incentive to experiment, what is our definition of good leadership? And, you know, no other species on this planet would outsource leadership to a being that was not competent in its dedication to the well-being of the pack or the community. Only us. We really should be humbled. And the word human comes from humus, which is dirt, from which we get humble. We're meant to be humble people in the dirt. Yeah, so yes, all of that. And then, you know, I want to toss it to you with your wonderful poem on clearing out, because right now, you know, it's jumpy and intense. The whole world pours into all of us in some customized form, which is whether we know about the horror in Gaza or not, we do. You know, and, you know, it was some years back, I was working with a lot of young women with anorexia and exploring their charts and going, okay, on one level, there's the social cultural image tyranny and the issues with their mother. But wait, there's more. There was in everyone, there was this empathic connection to the collective. And it was as though they were embodying discrepancy. So I go, so third world realities are first world neurosis, psychosis, whatever it is. Holy. And so in all of us, you know, it's like the grief in the world, if we don't address it, it's a soul sickness in us all. It does pour in, you know, there's no escaping, you know, from collective grief. There can be apparent distractions, or people are like, I just don't pay attention to the news, but it's in us anyway, you know, and it's telling us a story.
Yeah, and you know, I think it's what you said about Valentinus, and that he got close to, you know, being the signature of the times. You know, his vision being the signature. And it, you said, 100 years it took, you know, the dominator church to absolutely squash what he had to offer, to, you know, get it out, you know, like erase it, like tear the pages out of the book. And I sort of feel like, I mean, it feels superficial, but sometimes it feels like the pressure of this moment with, you know, and it's the pressure of population, the pressure of consumerism, the pressures that are on us right now are pressures that could go to maturation. They could go to like, oh, my little puny life is like, I want to be bigger. I want to be more encompassing. I want to understand more. I want to be a force for good in this world. Or I'm scared and I'm going to fight. And, so I don't know. I think, as I said in that poem, I think we're all shaking in our boots. And so one opportunity is to send it outward, and another opportunity is to send it inward as like the tempering force. And that's not the preferred behavior of most humans, you know. And I also think that, you know, well, one thing I want to say is that as you were telling these stories, I thought, oh my goodness, you talked every year at Bioneers. I haven't been there in a long time, but, you know, that was like the precious moment when Caroline was going to sort of tell us the story of who we are in this moment and give us some guidance about, like, you know, where can we get our fingers out there and into making something good. And we need myth makers. We need stories. We need stories around the fire to tell us who we are. It's like I was sitting here and I was mesmerized just by how you were laying out this moment. And so it was filtering into me and I was starting to think, oh yeah, this is what's going on and I can be part of this. So it's so important. It's so important that you do. I'm not buttering it up or anything, but it's just, it's beautiful.
No, that's wonderful. Well, we're going to have a very short, well, medium short break music that is right now, and we'll come back to all of these things. My perfect for now is longtime ally Vicki Robin, We are about to hear, it's a favorite, Otiken, this shamanic group. It's their song Storm. And we don't have the English words, but they are, we're heading into the storm, there's danger, but there's safety and community. Seek your friends. So here's, we'll be right back after this crucial, pertinent, rousing, dance around to it, undulate. The Sky Rivers need us to undulate. Here we go with Otiken and Storm. This is Caroline Casey, Visionary Activist Show. That is the song by Otiken called Storm. It's dangerous, but we're gathering. Isn't that spicy? Oh,
it's wonderful.
It's great. And to undulate. Remember, we want to remember everything. Again, the Piscean realm says, what have we forgotten that we must remember? In all cultures, I think pretty much all cultures, there was the power of music and dance to take on the demons of the community and transform them. In Egypt, it's called the Zar, where the music takes the dancer down to the ground and she thumps the earth, thump, thump, and takes on the demons of the community and transforms them. And that's in us. It's like we have endogenous receptors for cannabis and DMT. We have endogenous receptors for myth, endogenous receptors for ritual, endogenous receptors for part of the function of community is to gather, to take on the demons and cook them and transform them. And that music is so good. I hope everybody was writhing and undulating around because it's like, wujama, wujama, and calling it in. It's very powerful. That dynamic. And your life has been dedicated to deconditioning. Certainly all of us about money, the great book, Your Money or Your Life, powerful. But deconditioning, and even just the story of now, the Jupiter-Moon-Uranus conjunction, is deconditioning. And so one of the things it says, and I'll toss it to you, is, when before in human history have really spicy creative women in their 60s, 70s, 80s, and on been starting a whole liberating contribution chapter of their life? We go, well, not often we've been allowed to know about. And this pattern says exactly, everybody is part of an experiment on behalf of the earth herself, right? So you've been giving quite a lot of thought to the journey of aging. And if there's anything you want to bring up, I learned a lot about aging from Stella
I'll pour some stuff in the brew, and then we can see what bubbles. So I'm turning 79 this year, and a year ago I had this sort of like shocking realization. I've been like replicating myself for years, you know, just doing Vicky again and again and again and again, and sort of like never considering my age. And then I just looked and I thought, holy moly, I'm entering the part of my life when my life ends. And it was a shock to see that. And for me, it's like anything that's a shock is food for, you know, inquiry. And so I've spent a long time doing the work of what I'm calling coming of aging. Part of it is basically getting yourself beyond the barrier reef of resistance to the fact that you're aging, you know, and doing the life review and making amends to people and getting over your own internal self-hatred that you're going to be one of those old people, you know, with square bodies and jowls and stuff like that. No, that's them. And so there's a lot of work to accept that you're in this part of the journey, that your little boat is heading toward the river. And then what I'm finding is that things that I tried in my 20s, trying to be very spiritual, I would try to let go of. Things are falling away. Attachments, identities, things are not sticking to me as much. You know, indignation. It's so much easier to get over myself and over things. Sometimes there are insults or assaults that I don't even notice. And I was quite, you know, I've watched people talk about becoming elders, and I thought, nah, you're not. You know, because that seemed to be sort of an egoic costume. But I think there's something like coming of aging for me is the process of this sort of falling away and facing the dark and reconciling things and getting over yourself. And I'm just one little bead on an incredibly long necklace. I'm one of hundreds of billions of humans who've lived on this earth and whose bones are in the earth. You start to get that. And if you can tolerate it, which we often can't because we don't want it, it's starting to become luminous. And when you were talking about the ritual, and I was undulating, guaranteed.
Yes.
I was thinking that, you know, these women or, you know, people who are coming of aging become the rim that holds the wild ritual. Mm. And it's in a way, that's part of the letting go of, you know, your centrality and your identity. You know, like, I'm a player, I'm in there, I'm dancing, look at me. You know, no, I'm becoming one of the women in the shawls, you know, who've lost their features, and I'm at the rim. I haven't really, you know, that'll watch it, it'll take a while, but, you know, it's that container that eldering is the ability to be a container, to not be competing with the youngers who are taking on the mantle of world making. And it's so that's part of coming of aging. And I did a workshop last year called Looking into the Face of Death. And it was very powerful. We spent time up in a conservation cemetery, burial ground, which is basically, it had, you know, it's just a grid in a forest, and you had the opportunity to be buried there. And they discouraged you having grave markers, except for people who like gave, you know, a lot of, you know, people who had influence were able to put like a small little plaque. But you just saw mound after mound of people who've chosen to melt into the earth. And it was like so impactful for me that my time on earth, a lot of it has been assembling specialness. Hmm. It's just been fun. I like it. But I will disappear. I will sink into the earth again. And in a way that pleases me, I have a green burial plot that's right up the hill in the cemetery from my house. And so I just joke that I'll melt into my garden, you know, just come downhill with water. I'm fascinated with the liberating potential of entering into the part of the community that is in their final years. You can call them elders. You know, it's funny because you talked about our two presidential candidates as elderly, and elderly has a sort of debilitated feeling to it, but elder has this feeling.
Yeah,
it has a, so that's why I call it coming of aging. It's two gerunds, you know, it's like a process. If you want me to, I could read this poem about getting ready to die. Is that, maybe it takes too much time. But anyway, the poem is about, it's about a dream I had of a woman that I know in a field, and everybody she knows is around her, and she's about to ascend. You know, she's like a balloon, you know, and she actually cuts her own ribbons and floats up into whatever the ethers are with everybody around, and she's completely complete. She's let go of the identities. She's left her, you know, will and all the documentation on the dining table. It's all handled. It's like every piece of what you identified with was handled. You know, it was sort of blessed with love. It was, and so as she went, the whole field became radiant. And so I think that's my psyche starting to develop an identity, starting to understand this life in a different way. And I think it's very, I might have another decade. I don't know.
Oh, yeah.
You know, and no, and it, to I've... live into this and to live into, you know, it's like some people are saying, well, I'm really glad I'm old so I don't have to go through what's coming. And I sort of think, wow, what a wonderful time to be a little more spacious and more willing to be the ground underneath the feet of people who are going to live longer than I will. What a time. So it's also grappling with the uncertainty. And I think part of what's bedeviling people, and whether they go into like retirement on Lake Chapala or, cults or, gun clubs or wherever we go, where we identify, we're sort of like clinging on to a little piece of identity so that we don't have to be so afraid. Go.
I want to kind of jump back in some kind of imperfect defiance in a way. Bellerwith Knapperstack years ago sent me a stamp that I put on envelopes, and it said, "Time and trouble may tame a wild young woman, but a wild old woman is untamable by any force." And I love two things. One is, it was 2 years ago that marine biologists were saying, what possible use could postmenopausal mammals be? Right? And then they were like, oh, wait a minute. Oh, the orcas, she's everything. The orca grandmother in 60s, 70s and on is everything to the pod. And she's several feet out leading or several miles out leading. And they said what we found, and it humbled us arrogant whippersnapper marine biologists, with our rude question, is that everyone in the pod, her descendants, their well-being, their thriving, their physicality, their community is improved by her mere existence, even if they no longer know her. I go, I'm going for that thing. And I go for Robert Bly as he was facing into the vastness, right? But he wrote one of his last poems. with the great line, you know, it's like, you know, we welcome, you know, our unearned encouragement from the divine for keeping our small boats afloat when so many have gone down in the storm.
Go, oh.
And then just to, it's a great phrase. Exactly. And then I learned from Coyote, you know, when Stella Coyote, actual Coyote, was 17, 18, 19, old, you know, we always had our experimental deal, which is we gave up a lot and we made compromises to coexist. And I said to her, Stella, our deal is working out now because I can give you what nature would not, which is a safe old age. And what happened was noteworthy and remarkable and a gift to us all, because by providing a safe old age, and may this be a blessing to out into the world, if just the, you know, the babies and the old people, everybody, you know, to cultivate unique gift. We need everybody's unique gift, you know. And but what happened was, yes, some senses in her diminished, although cannabis helped her quite a lot. But other senses completely came alive. She absolutely got more psychic. I mean, we dreamed of each other. She was always at the gate when I got there. I mean, there was a lot more synchronicity in this kind of trickster dynamic, and I also loved when I would worry, because she was my longest stable relationship in the world. You know, what will I do when you die? What will I do with your beautiful little body? What will I do with it? And she would bite me pretty hard. And I love that. I love that. She would look into my eyes, and it was very clear. She's like, we'll know when we get there. Don't do this now. Don't burden me or yourself with, as Wendell Berry says, forethought of grief. We'll know when we get there. And I treasure that, you know.
Wow. And I don't think that... Okay, finish. Go finish.
Yeah, no, go. Yeah.
Yeah, I actually, you may be sort of pushing me, but you're sort of a boat coming. You're kind of like nudging my boat. You're not, you know, frontal, because I do think that. I think the work that I've been doing in the last year, been required to do, is making me, as Florida Scott Maxwell said, which I love, you know, if you can own everything you've been and done, then you can become fierce with reality. And I think that's an opportunity that I can't define for myself, because I'm still in the outskirts of the, you know, the village of elders, if you will. But I do have a sense that I'm talking about like, you know, I'm a boomer. I'm just completely self-referential talking about my own growth, but it's sort of me entering the mythic realm. And I do feel that I'm noticing that more and more people are coming to me just to tell, you know, younger people talk about their story, you know, maybe not exactly ask for advice, but I'm available. That's what I feel. It's less of my own, you know, efforting, and I'm more available, and I'm also speaking more clearly. I've been sort of quiet because I'm sort of in between things, you know, but I think that's part of the opportunity is to not to be influential, not to like wave a magic wand and make things change, not to be like that, but to be influencing things at a different level. There was a book by Robert Heinlein, who's quite a sexist, but he had a book called Lost Legacy. And it was about a couple, young couple that stumbles into, they're not a couple yet, they're just two people, young people, and they stumble into Mount Shasta, all of the great wisdom teachers, including Ambrose Bierce, are in there. Mm. And they're sort of holding the world together. And there's some problem, and the young people go off and they solve the problem. They realize in the process of solving the problem that they have fallen in love. They want to be married. So there's one person in this group that makes no sense whatsoever, not a heroic anything. It's like an old woman knitting, sitting in a rocking chair. And, you know, it's like they couldn't make sense of her. but apparently she was part of the pod. And so when they come back, and she's just sitting there knitting, and they say, oh, guess what? We discovered we love each other, and we're going to get married. And she said, I thought so. You know, it's like, that's always been like a sort of aspirational thing of being older, to be able to be thinking or feeling things into being, not as an effort of the mind, but just rocking in the chair, knitting, and sourcing what needs to be sourced. I don't know. So it's like I'm just pulling for images of what that possibility is. And in our society, I mean, there's very little out there that provides us with that kind of roadmap of being, you know, fierce with reality into our 80s and 90s. It's just very, very little that overrides the ageism and the grief of losing the self that you thought you were. So that's why I'm sort of poking at this.
I want to bring in Groucho Marx.
There
was a great show, you know, Groucho Marx, You Bet Your Life. And he was hosting a 96-year-old woman, and she was just very kick-bat and lively. And he said to her, he was not easily impressed, right, by anybody. He said, you're amazing. You're 96, and you're very kick-butt. You must have the secret to happiness. What is that? And she said, why, Groucho, I realize there's no such thing as happiness, and you have to be happy without it. Anyway, I love that, right? And and you can fill in the blank. There's no such thing as enlightenment. You know, there's no right. such thing as, and you just have to be, you know, happy without it, enlightened without it. I've met a number of just, I had an actual fairy godmother who was singing Cole Porter, you know, at Carnegie Hall, and when she was 96, you know. When I was in Syria with Deborah Felmuth, in one of the UNRWA, the UNRWA, very good people, refugee camps, this 96 seems to be a cool, this 96-year-old woman, the call to prayer came, and she got up and celebrated, just, you know, and then said powerful things. And she said, at the time, this was, you know, a decade and a half ago, maybe, but she said, we don't want people deriving status from our suffering. We want people to come here with joy and music and beauty. And she was just very woofy, not to be messed with, not caring what people think, but still powerful in convening, in keeping the portals open between the backstage divine and the human community, you know, that realm. We do a shout out to, you know, kick butt, whatever. So we don't know, you know, about these mysteries, you know, but we do know here's where your poem, I've been clearing out my house, is so useful. Let me set it up for you. You know, as Rumi said, you can't avoid anything, you can run towards it and embrace. So these powerful patterns are better if we cooperate, if we work with them, otherwise they happen to us, right? You know, change happens to us in a way we might not like so much. But Pluto and Mars, you know, and Pluto in Aquarius for the next 24 years, all about community and the shadow of community and real community. But friend Sylvia says many, many metaphors. She said one metaphor for Pluto is like the early design of jet engines, that it gathers force from what it expels, right? And so everything we release, we go, phoom. So do you have your poem, I've been clearing up my house in front of you?
I do,
so good?
Yeah.
Oh, goody. Okay, let's go there.
I'll just read that part of it. I've been clearing out my house, giving away the exercise bicycle, the heavy black filing cabinet, the futon Jarrett, the dining table and the chairs and the juicer and the wicker chest with the free sign I'd lugged home and filled with pillows, which I've also given away. Big boxes of clothes and stuff loaded into the car and off to the thrift store. Big boxes of paper gone to recycle, like bank records from 10 years ago, so old the paper clips have rusted. No one is coming to inspect my records. Next are the jewelry, the dried up glues and tubes of ointment and cans of paint, every just-in-case thing, every blow-up bed stored because when the apocalypse comes, I'll need them. Something in me is clearing the decks to get to my soul's bucket list, the songs not yet sung, the pardons not yet given, the poem still bubbling up from the artesian well of creativity, the last hurrahs of getting everyone to do something so beautiful that ancient knots are loosened and we all of us, are in that golden field and a bit more free.
Yeah.
It's sort of like, we can... Go ahead.
No, you go.
Go ahead. Yeah, we're participating.
No, never mind me. You keep going.
Okay.
I'm just making animal sounds over here.
Mm-hmm. What you're offering to me right now is that there are archetypes of the older woman in her, joy and in her power and in her, just like, yeah, I'm old. Why do I do it? Because I smoke cigars. It's like there are archetypes out there that can nourish us as we get past the barrier reef of identities, and allow ourselves to be actually the old people in the society. And not keep trying to be younger. And so that's very encouraging, listening to you telling these stories. Because I think it's like to have an archetype and think, oh, yeah, that it's like a suit that you're going to put on. Like, oh, I'm going to be Venus. No, I'm going to be, Minerva or whatever. But there are these stories that are evocative, that sort of like, okay, yeah. There is a light on the horizon. There is something I'm heading for, and I can feel it. And the closer I get to it, the more I can feel the magnetism of it. That's what I feel from the stories that you're telling. It's, it's just so beautiful. So I'm just doing the work, I'm like letting go of things that ask me asking to leave. I've sort of assembled a group of my favorite people, many ages, women in my community. And we've gotten together the second time was the other night. And somebody brought up the word gossip.
If you can condense this into a blessing, because we're in our last.
Yeah, okay. Seconds. So they talked about women getting together and gossiping, and that was negative. But no, a gossip was a group of women who were speaking together around the knitting or whatever and making the world whole. So, yeah, that's what I aspire to. Thank you, Caroline.
Yeah. Singing and weaving blessings into our craft. Now, thank you so much, Vicki Robin. It's good to... We were housemates once at a writing retreat, and may we be again, possibly, and in this kick-butt way. So thank you so much. Thanks always to Kirsten Thomas, super board-op ally. You can find notes and charts at Patreon Visionary Activist Show for more backstage brewing. And again, thanks very much, Vicki Robin, and we will... keep cahooting. Woof, woof, woof. Thank you, team.
Yep. Cahoot. Thank you.